are you and what are you doing here?
Hi, everybody.
Well, what are we waiting for?
This is fantastic.
Hello, hello, hello.
This will only hurt for 22 minutes.
It's very early. I may have to hurt you. Call me in 5 minutes.
This is something that is treatable. This is something that is fixable.
Hey, this is not a test.
Oh, my God, it's early.
We made it to Friday on the Amy Beth Arkley Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are you? Say, I want my hour back. I've got to put the brain trust together and figure out, how did a week with one less hour feel endless? We'll talk. Hey, you know, we're Justice Junkies, this one's for you. We've been talking about this all week. A lot of comments, questions coming in over the transom for Legal Eagle Beth Karras, who will join us in a couple of moments. If you're listening live on Friday, March 13th, good luck to us all. 9 a.m. out west, 11 central, noon here in the east. Join us live. Number in motion, 347-857-4505. The aforementioned busy Twitter feed also available at AB Writes. The Facebook page, I think, is also up, so you can post comments there. We'll take them all in. We have some common threads to get to. The show today brought to you in part by Audiophile. Caress your ears with everything you want to hear, from music to books to podcasts. Find it at Audiophile. And as we said, we're so delighted to have Beth Karras join us. She is the noted commentator, started out her an analyst, legal analyst, started out as a prosecutor, became a Court TV reporter and analyst, stayed there for many years, transitioned into True TV's In Session, later HLN, now venturing into her own enterprise, the website Karras on Crime. And she's just back from Jodi Arias, part de, re-de, the penalty phase trial out of Arizona, and more news brewing there. Beth, as we said, we're so honored to have you here. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Happy to have you. Yeah, oh, we're so happy to have you here. You have so much knowledge about so many cases. You have covered everybody from Casey Anthony, of course, Phil Spector, Conrad Murray, the Sandusky trial, Drew Peterson, Scott Peterson. You did all the Petersons except Michael, right?
Right.
And, of course, Jodi Arias. Which you've covered from the beginning. Everybody's riveted to this case. We don't really even have to rehash it, but people know. She killed her boyfriend, Travis Alexander, in a brutal way. She has a little bit of a cachet of people that are diehard supporters who believe she was abused by him. But most people really believe she was a psychopathic, cold-blooded killer who deserves a death penalty. There's like a bloodlust for the death penalty, which kind of overshadowed that first guilty verdict. People seem to forget, and this was bothering me about the first trial, she was found guilty of murder. She was also found guilty of murder with aggravating circumstances, which made her eligible for the death penalty. But that first jury hung, 8-4, couldn't make up their mind between life and death. So it went to a retrial in Arizona, which is that the only state that has this second bite of the judicial apple, so to speak, where they can try the penalty
phase? No, in California. In Arizona, it's limited to two. But in California, I think you can go more than that. I think,
really?
There's a limit, although prosecutors will use their discretion. But states like Georgia...
Crazy.
It's one time, one shot.
Yeah.
Hung jury.
I thought it was like that all over, because that makes no sense to retry it. Just if you're a taxpayer, you think you would go crazy over that.
In Arizona, statistics show that the vast majority of retrials in the penalty phase end up in death.
They do.
And
oh,
look
that's
at
why
what
went
happened
for
to Jodi. Juan Martinez didn't even put on the evidence that the first jury heard. Just in a real cursory way talked about, you know, the premeditation and gas cans and stuff, but not much. And that second jury still voted 11-1. And the alternates would have voted death. I mean, you know, the state was very close to getting what they wanted. But I want to go back to the first point you raised, because I do agree with you that justice was done for the Alexander family when she was convicted of first-degree premeditated murder. There were a lot of tears and sobs, audible sobs in that courtroom when the jury deadlocked again. I'm sure it was just frustrating for the Alexander family. They've spent a lot of money to attend the trial because they live in California, and it was a long trial, months longer than it was scheduled to be. But what I say is don't lose sight of, you know, what of the justice in this case. Keep your eye on the ball. Go talk to Ron Goldman's father and his sister, Kim Goldman. They would have loved to have heard the guilty verdict, guilty O.J. Simpson, that this family heard. They would have loved it. They would have loved if he got life in prison. You know, natural life is what Jodi, I know, is going to get. I mean, I'm convinced she would not get that parolable life or possibility of release. And to the Goldmans, there was no justice. To Kaylee Anthony, who was tossed in the woods in a trash bag like a piece of garbage, there was no justice. But there is justice for the Alexanders. She's convicted.
Well, also, the truth is, and you know more about this than I would, with the appeals process, isn't it a much harder appeals process for the death penalty, so there's a better chance that the case would have been overturned and we would have to start from
Absolutely.
Even throwing out
Absolutely.
The guilty verdict,
and,
right?
In fact, she will get one appeal paid for by the state, but there are many layers to the appeals here. There are at least two within the state, one to the middle-level court, one to the high court, and then if you can come up with more reasons, you might be able to go to the federal system. It would have been an automatic appeal, and it would have been a federal appeal as well. Everything would have been paid for had she received the death penalty. So she's going to have to raise money for her defense or find a lawyer, for her appeal, or find a lawyer or law firm willing to do it pro bono. She'll get one appeal paid for, and that's it. But she'll need probably more than one.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I think, you be careful what you wish for, because this way, a lot of people have the impression, I guess, it's a false impression that, you get the death penalty, it's like a TV movie, you're going to be executed the next Monday. It doesn't work that way. I mean, it goes through a very grueling period. In fact, I think while she was on trial the first time, wasn't there a woman on death row? There were only a few women on death row, and one was actually overturned after being in jail for several years, and she starts,
years.
I believe she starts.
Yes.
Isn't she going back to the guilt phase, too?
Yes,
no.
But I think they've tossed her case. She's a free woman because of misconduct by the prosecution and the police. I believe she's going to be a free woman. The state may be appealing that. But I just
she got it totally thrown out. Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, but I think the state may be appealing that, but she's a free woman right now. I want to add that there was a capital case in the same courthouse earlier in 2014, a woman named Marissa DeVault. She killed her husband with a hammer, and she hammered his head while he was sleeping.
Nice.
Killed him. And he lived for a little while on life support, and then he died. So a very involved case. Jury deliberated for 5 weeks before deciding to give her life and not death. Just the penalty phase, 5 weeks. One of the jurors in that case attended Arias every day, and he blogged about it. His name is Paul Sanders. Paul was, very pro-prosecution in his blogs and all. And anyway, he said that when the judge came back, it wasn't Stevens, it was a different judge, came back to talk to the jury after their verdict of life, he basically told them they made the right decision because 70% of death verdicts are overturned. And they said, well, how many life verdicts get overturned? He said 1%. So, that was this judge, and this is Paul Sanders quoting him, but it's a Maricopa County judge. So that's very telling. I mean, Jody Arias is not getting a do-over, the way I see it, based on those statistics.
Right. So she's really, her life as she knew it and as she was hoping for it is over, and she's going to pay a big, steep penalty. I don't get the bloodlust. It also kind of puts the jury system in a bad light for these high-profile cases because people malign that first jury when they couldn't come to a decision, when they did get it right in the conviction. People malign this jury even though it was that one holdout, and there's some weird stuff going around about that woman and whether she should have even been on the jury. I mean, what do you make of this fact that she had some domestic violence in her background, and she also had her husband, her ex-husband, was prosecuted by Juan Martinez. How did she get on the jury?
Well, I was there for that, and the jurors were questioned individually. And I did look at my notes, which only arrived. My boxes I shipped a week ago only arrived last night, and my notes aren't any more than what I already posted on my site, a lot of bullet points about her. She was very open about both of her ex-husband and her current husband having been through the system. Her current husband had done some state prison time, but a few years before she met him, and he's like clean and straight now. But her ex-husband went to prison when they were separated. He had another case which Martinez had prosecuted, and it was a plea deal. He pled down to a 4-month sentence, but that's separate from the one that sent him to state prison. And that was around the time they got married in May of 2000. She was asked on the questionnaire, they're not public, but it's a standard question. Do you recognize or know any of the
right,
parties
sure.
in this case? And usually jurors are given a list of the witnesses. The list is read aloud or it's attached to a questionnaire. Not all cases have questionnaires, but cases we cover that are high profile have questionnaires.
Sure.
And, if they recognize anyone, they have to say so because you don't want, a friend of your, work colleague testifying. And so should she have disclosed that she recognized or knew Juan Martinez from 15 years earlier, 14, 15 years earlier when her ex-husband was prosecuted by him. I don't know. I don't know if she went to court with her husband. I don't know if she ever eyeballed Juan Martinez, and that's apparently what's being investigated.
Oh, interesting. All right. And what about this? There was some talk about, from the jury after they came out and spoke, and I think a lot of them spoke. She wasn't among them, obviously.
No.
And there was kind of a mixed bag about whether they appreciated her holding to her guns or not. I think some people thought she wasn't deliberating fairly or open with an open mind, and they actually went, is it true that they passed a note or talked to the judge about getting her off the jury, and that didn't happen? Because I know there's a lot of chatter on social media, as you know, about trying to get some prosecution against her and or the judge, which I'm sure won't happen. But what do you know about
the
machinations there?
There was a hearing during deliberations behind closed doors. We don't have the details of it beyond what the judge put in a decision. They call their orders or decisions minute entries in Arizona, and I put a copy of that on my site, but it's out there. You can, you know, see this multiple-page minute entry where the judge describes everything that happened in those last days of deliberation as well as the deadlock, and she describes the notes. And, yes, the jury had said, they had sent out a note, actually a couple days before the mistrial, concerned about Juror 17, but Juror 17 had written a separate note also saying that she was feeling bullied and they were putting photos in front of her and she was, you know, basically sticking to her gun. And so what happened was, according to the judge's minute entry, I mean, she reads them this instruction to go back and keep an open mind, listen to each other, try to be unanimous. And when the four men, it was a man, was questioned afterwards about her and whether it was getting better, he actually said she was deliberating a little more. You know, he's apparently come out publicly saying now he kind of regrets that. It wasn't like she was fully deliberating, but she was a little bit better. So, and that foreman, I asked him in the press conference, I can't remember. There was a question about whether or not, you know, he faulted her or respected her for sticking to her guns. He said he respected her. And another juror said, we don't have ill will toward her. You know, they just tried to get her to move off her position, and she wasn't.
And she wasn't doing. But, you know, this is not uncommon because, as I recall, and you know this better than most of us because you've followed these cases even closer, they had situations like this both in Scott Peterson, where they replaced a couple of jurors, I think, and also in Phil Spector, the first trial, wasn't there? I think it was the foreman, too, who actually got ousted in both of those cases. Was that true? I mean, refresh my memory.
Phil Spector, that was his first trial was in 2007. That mistrial was the end of September, but the jury deliberated most of September 2007. And the fourth person was the holdout, and he took one juror with him. So it was a 10-2 vote. They didn't find him guilty, right? It wasn't a life or death situation.
Right, that was a mistrial.
Guilt or not.
Right.
He was retried and found guilty, and now he's in prison. And in Scott Peterson, again, the fourth person, who was a MD, JD,
jurors
basically mutinied because they didn't like the way he was leading their deliberations. He refused to take a vote. And he was a big note taker, and he was going through everything very methodically. And it was frustrating the jurors because they wanted to vote and see where everybody stood. They weren't sure that they were all, you know, in different places, right? And he wasn't leading them properly. So anyway, he gets bounced. And another juror got bounced during deliberations because she actually came in and admitted she did some research online. She got on the internet. She did some research to help their deliberations, and she got ratted out for that.
So this is not uncommon, especially when these cases go on forever.
By the way, one more thing, Amy Beth. In the Massawi trial, you know, the 20th hijacker, 911 hijacker, he was tried federally in Virginia, and he faced death. And my recollection is there was one holdout. He did not get death because of one holdout.
Fascinating. Well, the death penalty, too, people should realize, is under a lot of new scrutiny because of these botched execution
lethal
attempts
injection.
In Oklahoma. Lethal injection. So they're reevaluating it, and some states have moratoriums on it. I mean, I'm not a proponent of the death penalty anyway, just as people know who listen to my show. So I wouldn't be picked for that jury had I lived in Arizona to begin with. But I understand where people are coming from, but you just have to look at, you just said, your eye on the whole bigger picture, and there was justice here, and she is going down for the count, and life in prison isn't going to be fun for her, and especially the early part of it, I understand she will be treated almost like a death row situation where she will be isolated at least for the first couple of years. Is that right?
Well, that's the impression we all got, but it's not exactly that. She's isolated to the extent that she will not have a cellmate in her 6-by-8-foot cell. Those cells are shared. She actually gets her own cell for 2 years, and it's my understanding that she'd kind of like it that way. So that's not good. But if she has good behavior, and that's, you know, that's a big if, but if she really behaves herself, there are various tiers. Within 30 days, 60 days, within 90 days, you know, she moves up. And she can start within 30 days having some contact.
Oh, okay. I
thought
she was going to be
stuff like that. So it's
isolated
really,
for a few years.
She gets her own cell, though, for 2 years.
She gets a single, like in a dorm. You know?
She gets a single. That's right. Like in a dorm, she gets a single. Which is really
so she,
a step up, right? Everybody wants.
I was going to say the step up, yeah, right. But the big getting back to the big if. Apparently, she's under some trouble now again with the infamous Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio because she's violated some jail rules. I understand what's going on there.
But you know, one of the rules is the way she conducted these video visits. You know, this is a system that was implemented during the trial. That's my understanding. And to have these video visits where like this monitor is actually like rolled to the cell or something, and they're not in the visitor's area, is my understanding. I haven't done this with an inmate, but people can actually call up, have to be accepted by Jody Area, so they have to register and be accepted. And she's apparently had, you know, like hours of visits with supporters, from all over the country, different parts of the world, and she was talking to two 15-year-old girls, the parent of one, I'm not sure they were sisters, the parent of one who caught them talking to her and stopped it. But Jody Arias was overheard, at least on the jail side, instructing them on how to get fake IDs so they could be of age or something. I mean, he's really upset. And some visitors were using cell phones to take photos of her, I guess her video image, because there was a photo that was out there in social media. People thought it was Jody taking a picture of herself in the bathroom during court. Not so. That did not happen. Sometime during the trial or during deliberations, but apparently it was taken by a visitor, and that was, I guess, against the rules. I don't know that Arias could have prevented that, but if she instructed one of her visitors not to do it, I'm sure they would have abided by her instruction.
So now she has no visitation and she has no... A whole bunch of restrictions have been placed on her for the next few weeks.
He's really curbed her, not letting her buy, you know, at the commissary. This is the sheriff, Sheriff Arpaio, quite well known, he's very strict, and he's really curbed her access to visitors, to the commissary, and stuff. And she's in her own cell. She has been since she was convicted in May of 2013. She's been in lockdown for 23 hours a day, except, you know, when she was in court, of course.
Right. So she's really gotten used to the whole jail, prison life and mentality, I guess, because she's been in jail for
institutionalized
years.
Right. The term is institutionalized. She's definitely institutionalized, she's adapting.
Yeah.
But she doesn't look as healthy as she, I mean, who would? I mean, she's eating jail food, and she's not getting sun, and, you know, not eating as well. I'm sure the life expectancy, I don't know the statistics, but life expectancy in our institutions is not what it is when you're on the outside. So,
well, she did say when she was promoting herself for getting the death penalty after her conviction, when she did her media tour, that, you know, she doesn't want to live in one place for a long time, and she has a good life expectancy because she has, you know, good genes. You remember that when she said that to one of the reporters?
I do remember that now that you mention it.
So who knows? I mean, it's so surreal. It must be surreal to sit there, because I know when the verdicts come down and you watch it on TV, I'm all in a knot, and I have no particular skin in the game. It doesn't matter to me, really, what happens, but you just get this nervous feeling. I mean, sitting there, would you have that kind of feeling when you're like, oh, my God, what's going to happen?
Yes, I get the butterflies in my stomach
like
I used to get when it was my case, when I was an assistant DA here in Manhattan, but I still get them because, you know, there's nothing like the human drama that unfolds in courtrooms every day. I mean, you can't replicate this anywhere. It's, you know, we're in the moment. We're a part of, you know, vindication for one side and punishment for the other side. I mean, we're seeing, you know, what 12 of our citizens have decided to do with somebody who, you know, they're going to either label them a felon for life, or they're going to take away their right to breathe by ordering a death sentence or suggesting the life sentence where they're locked up forever in a cage. I mean, it's really high stakes, and you can't get much better than that.
Can't get higher, and you have both sides. I mean, you have one side, you have the Alexander family, and of course they were audible, those tears and sighs and sobs. And then on the other side, you have, I didn't hear or see too much of the of Arias's family. I guess her parents were there, yes?
Her mother was there, not her father.
Her mother.
And I didn't even see her siblings there at the end. They had come in and out. At one point, her father came for a week. But, you know, they live in Yreka, California, which is in Northern California. So it was quite a drive. And I suspect that her mother, Sandy, who was there just religiously every day to support her daughter, stayed with friends. I mean, I can't imagine she was in a hotel or a rental place.
But nobody made a plea for her, right? She didn't even speak for herself at the end. Because, you know, this wasn't televised. Was any of this tape, by the way? Because are they going to show it at some point, or it's never going to be shown?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, I've just ordered the whole trial, and I'll be putting it on my site. Here's what happens in Arizona. They not only does a stenographer create a transcript of the proceedings, but they do digital video recordings as part of the court system, the court record.
Oh, okay.
And those are called FTRs, and it stands for the record. They call them FTRs. And so they're making the FTRs available for a fee, and I'm going to be putting the trial up. And the good stuff about that is the good news is that we're going to get those closed hearings that, you know, I couldn't blog. None of us were in there. The courtroom was sealed.
Yeah,
but we're
going to
get not just Arias' testimony, because we have transcripts of that now, but we're going to get some of these other hearings. In any event, there was a TV camera that could record but not air until after the trial, and so all the locals were there, but they're not putting it up. They might be putting some snippets up, but their camera is not as good as the FTR, because they had a camera shooting through a window in the back of the courtroom, a window to a media room, and so it's the back of Jody's head, the back of the lawyer's heads. You just see the judge and the witness, and then, you know, a wide shot of the courtroom, but Jody's not facing the camera. The camera's in the back of the courtroom.
She didn't make a plea for herself like she did the first time when she stood up there with the
box
of love and the T-shirt and all that.
Right. She didn't allocute. That's called an allocution, where she can stand up and ask for mercy, express remorse, explain herself. She never finished her testimony once the appellate courts ordered the courtroom open, because remember, the judge was sealing the courtroom to let her testify because she was intimidated looking out at the media and because of threats.
Right.
And then she wouldn't finish her testimony. And then she wouldn't allocute. She will have a right to say something at sentencing. I suspect she won't. But her family can speak if they want to, since there's theoretically a choice for the judge, but it's really academic because this possibility of release up to 25 years is a fiction. They don't have any procedure in place for that to happen.
Oh,
so
really?
Right now it's a natural life sentence. So anyway, her family may get up there and make a record, but this is the opportunity for the Alexander family to get up and really scream at her and say things they couldn't have said in their own victim impact statement. They can look at her and point at her and say stuff to her. That could be really dramatic if they decide to do it. Sometimes family members will put things in writing, and then the prosecutor will
read it. Somebody
else
will read it,
Yeah.
Will that be televised, or that's also going to be waiting until?
Well, there's an application to televise it live. The judge hasn't ruled yet. She's asked the lawyers to submit their position and any opposition by March 28th, and so the sentencing is the 13th. So it's possible that it'll be streamed live or televised live. Now, if it's televised, you can bet that HLN will carry it. But I'm not
HLN,
going
a lot of
on
people.
HLN.
Well, you're not. A lot of people on the Twitter feed asked about that. The HLN kind of devolved their format, is the nicest way to put it. I mean, I'm guessing it was economics. I'm assuming that, you know, CNN had a lot of cutbacks, and they took off most of their shows. They really only have Nancy Grace and Dr. Drew, and I don't know what they do in the daytime, but they pretty much took off all the court coverage. And there's nothing now on television for court coverage, at least there used to be. There was court TV. That got devolved, and HLN picked up the slack, and now, you know, I'm thinking maybe MSNBC, which I think is going to have to do a rehaul at some point. So you might want to, you know, have some context there.
It's expensive to do what I did for almost 20 years.
Yes.
It's expensive. And there are so many variables in covering a court case. Like, you can gear up and you can get your satellite truck and your crew out there, and all of a sudden you show up at the courthouse and you find out that the defendant took a plea or the case just got adjourned. And, you know, you're talking about tens of thousands of dollars gone. So it used to cost I'm sure costs are lower now, but it used to be $17,000, $20,000 a day. So it's expensive, and we didn't...
But there's an audience for it. There is an audience for it, though. You know, there's got to be,
Yes, there's an audience for it. And I still believe it should come back. I mean, to ignore people who are, like, diehard trial aficionados by just saying, okay, we're gone, we're done, and have nothing in its place remotely similar, to me, is just unfair. It caused the rest of us to at least, you know, go to the Internet. And, I mean, I'm trying to do some of my reporting now on the Internet. I hope that I can stream on my site. It's not television, but... It's at least a place for me to, you know, park my reporting until something more comes about.
Well, a lot of people, you have a lot of fans, you know you do, and a lot of people have written in and saying, well, what's the deal with HLN? And people have been complaining about it. So, I just assume it's an economic situation, but there is an audience for it. And I know the whole thing with cable was supposed to give people niches. You know, now it's like every show is, they just do cheap reality shows or replay other things. It's like, well, what's the point? It's like the old Springsteen song, you know, 57 channels and nothing on. Now it's 300 channels and nothing on. You know, it's the same thing
right,
every channel.
You're absolutely right.
What's the point of that? You know, yeah, so hopefully you'll get some coverage somewhere. It's just I guess it is expensive, but there are definitely people who would watch it, so that should help the advertising end of it. You know, if you have,
and there are ways to share expenses. Courts say, look, you know, when they award pool camera to a network, and we used to become pool all the time, they say, okay, it's a public courtroom. We're going to let you put your camera in here, or two or three cameras, but you have to provide a mechanism for anyone else who wants to come, TV stations, radio, anyone else who wants to come, Internet, to plug in and get the audio and video feed from you. So we used to have this, you know, distribution box they'd plug in. We never charged anyone to plug in. But I think in the future it's going to be, we're providing, you know, the manpower, all the cameras, the cables, the equipment, all that. Then, and we're, you know, giving you the video. We're shooting it for you to plug in. You're going to have to pay us a little bit of a daily rate. And that would help to curb costs, and I think that's going to be the future.
Yeah, and with technology the way it is, you know, you have more chances, as you said, to do that and distribute it amongst multiple platforms. But there is definitely a hunger for it, or, you know, people are fascinated. Like you said, there's the human drama, and it unfolds. It's like, where else except maybe in sports, if things happen live and you don't really know what's going to happen, you know, and it's just...
Correct. That's the only analogy is sports, I think.
Yeah. It's so interesting, and these cases are so interesting. A couple of other questions. Let's just get to these about Arias, and I have a few other questions for some of the other cases you covered. There are some people, and I don't know, you were there for both trials, who are very not complimentary, shall we say, towards Judge Stevens, and said she bumbled along the case. She seemed to be, this is what a few people said, she seems to be bending over backwards, or she seemed to bend over backwards to Jody, and I think it's because she was worried about the appeals, and she had to dot her I's and cross her T's. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I actually agree with you, because Judge Stevens is a former prosecutor and is not a Jody Arias fan, believe me. So, I'm sure she's going to give natural life to Jody, but of course had no communications with the judge about that. That would be totally inappropriate. I think that she was concerned about a reversal, and this was her first capital case, and these cases get scrutinized on appeal. If Jody got death, every single ruling by the judge was going to be under a microscope like no other case. It won't have the same scrutiny with a life sentence.
Well, that was the other thing. People, are you sure? Because a lot of people are worried about the parole thing, too. They say, now if she gives them, she's too soft, she'll give her the parole. And you said, first of all, it will be moot anyway. But my reaction to that was, does she want to still be a judge, or does she want to retire to Arizona, or does she want to move somewhere else? Because I don't think that would be a popular decision had she given her, the possibility. But what's your take on that?
Listen, I will bet anyone who wants to wager a bet with me that Jody gets natural life. I mean, this jury was 11-1 for death. You think the judge is going to give her the lightest sentence? Uh-uh. There's no way. Plus, she instructed the jury that there's no mechanism in place for this release. Not to say there wouldn't be in 15 years or something, but I just can't see Jody Arias getting anything but natural life. And this judge is not going to be soft on Jody. Trust me.
Well, even if you got possibility of parole, I mean, Charles Manson is parolable, too, but he never gets it. So, I mean, just because you're possible, the Alexander family would show up every time. And I understand they don't want to have to go through that, and I don't want them to have to go through that either, but... You know, the appeals are the appeals. They're going to have to deal with that. They would have to deal with a lot more, I think, a lot more pressure and a lot more possibility of a total overturn if it was death. So in some ways, this is better. This doesn't feel better for them, I guess, because to them, it's not revenge, really. I know that some of the Jody supporters said, oh, the death penalty is just revenge. It's just for them, that's what they feel is justice. And I get it.
Right. I mean, Travis didn't have, you know, she was his, you know, judge, jury, and executioner. So.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how they feel. So, but, you know, going back to my first point that the Goldman family didn't get justice when O.J. was acquitted.
Yes.
I mean, I personally think O.J. did it. You know, what O.J. Yeah. did to Nicole, not to Ron, he sliced up Ron Goldman, but to Nicole was exactly what Arias did to
yeah.
Travis.
Oh, horrible.
I mean,
he did get justice later. But for something else. Yeah,
yeah, I think he got punished. I was at that Vegas trial. I think he got punished for being acquitted, punished for the murder. In fact, one of the jurors, I asked him that at a press conference. I said, some mm-hmm. of you, I mean, really, I mean, you couldn't put it out of your mind. Do you feel like he should have been punished 13 years ago? It was 13 years at that point. And the juror number one said, that was my position. I thought, oh, God, you never should have been on the jury. But anyway, I got it out of him.
Yeah.
So
you shouldn't say that. You shouldn't tell people. Well, that's the other thing, when people say that the jurors shouldn't say certain things. And I always say, yeah, but we want to hear from them. So don't malign them for coming out and talking to the press. Otherwise, we're not going to get
right.
what goes on behind closed doors.
Right,
you want to
exactly.
hear that. What about the other question that some people had? It was curious in the non-verdict verdict, which they handled differently both times, because I remember the first time when they had the non-verdict, it seemed like it was a verdict because they actually read it, and they said no decision. Remember that, when they read it out for the penalty phase,
it was a verdict. It was done differently this time. Maybe the judge learned from that. They still
said
it,
because that was really anticlimactic. She reads it like it was a verdict, the court clerk, and then she said no decision, and everybody was like, you got to be kidding.
Right. Yeah. It was read differently this time because the judge simply read their notes.
Yeah,
but
right. She said we don't know.
The court public information officer tweeted what was coming up. She said a verdict will be read at 9:30.
So people thought,
Oh, and this holdup caved.
Right. And but at that point, where they did televise that, and I saw that, where she said something about the pre-sentencing report, and Nurmi said she's waiving it. Well, first he said she wants to have a lawyer there, or she might waive it, and the judge was very testy then, which is what made me think she's not really a Jody Arias fan. She said, does she want it or not?
Well, the judge was emotional. Her voice was cracking.
Go ahead.
Well, initially, Jody waived her participation in the pre-sentence report.
Right.
By the end of the day, we learned in the judge's recent minute entry, by the end of that day, she waived the entire report. So she should have been sentenced that day. The only reason you have an adjournment, in my experience, is to give the probation department time to prepare this pre-sentence report, where they'll talk to Jody if she wanted to, but she said, I'm not talking, her family, the Alexander family, the lawyers, and they maybe give the judge a little more background about the case that the judge may not have known, and then they make a recommendation. Since there's theoretically a choice with release or without, they make a recommendation.
Yeah.
Well, this judge knows everything she needs to know about Jody Arias. She's lived with this case for years. There's nothing the probation department can really say to the judge. The judge knows everything. It's a pre-sentence report was really, it's really academic. It's kind of a waste of time for the probation department. Well, it turns out that Nurmi waived it by the end of the day, but maybe it was too late at that point. The case had been calendared now for April 13th. There was an effort apparently to move it up to an earlier date, but it didn't work out with the lawyer's schedule. So it stays at April 13th.
Wow. I mean, if I were the Alexanders, I would want to just get it over with and just have her, you know.
Absolutely.
Right. They were in the courtroom. I know they were emotional, but they were in the courtroom. It just seems on and on with these, you know, these delays. But she's where she's going to be, or not exactly where she's going to be. She's going to be transferred to the prison, and
Perryville,
I guess maybe she will be able to, you know, start that recycling program in the book club yet if she can get good behavior and move on up.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Remember that.
But it's still prison, and it's still not going to be a fun life. So let's not, you know, let's not lose
Correct.
Sight of that. But some other questions, some of the other hot cases you tried, you followed and covered, Casey Anthony, I guess that's one of the biggest verdict shockers. There also, people reminded me that it was part of jury selection was an issue there, too. And I think Belvin Perry, who I think looked like he was handling the case beautifully, kind of rushed through jury selection, as I recall, because I think he thought, as most of us thought, it was a slam dunk. Not so much. So they pushed through some people who might not have been the strongest jurors. What's your take on that?
Yes, you know, jury selection took place in another county. It was in Clearwater. I forgot what the county is. Pinellas County.
Pinellas.
And then they shipped the jurors into Orange County in Orlando. We watched jury selection because it was televised. I was watching it. I wasn't attending it. And they had a very skillful death penalty attorney. Jose Baez put together a good team. He wasn't that experienced, but he put together a good team. And they had this death penalty attorney out of Chicago. And she did a masterful job in jury selection because she started to plant seeds in jury selection, which was appropriate. But the seeds she planted included allegations of sexual abuse against Casey, you know, by her father, or at least that she was sexually abused as a girl. And
by George, yeah.
Things like that. And so this was already in jurors' minds. And then they start out, I mean, in the opening, you know, Jose Baez had kept a secret about, you know, what his theory of the case was, where he was going, until he said there was no murder, it was an accident, and then points the finger at George, the father, and forced the prosecution to put George on first. I don't think he was going to be their first witness. Forced them to put George on, to deny that he had sexually abused his daughter, to deny that he had found the baby floating in the pool, drowned. I mean, it was really, I thought, you know, I didn't like it, but it ended up being very effective.
It worked.
Yeah, and I saw the jury foreman was a like a high school coach or something, and we didn't know that, of course, to the end. He sat in the second row, the back row. And one day, I watched him stand while the other jurors were filing out, and he stood and he was staring across the courtroom, which is where the defense table was. It was like in an L shape, if you remember, because there were a lot of people at the defense table. And I think they had Casey sitting in a lower chair, so she looked even more diminutive sitting behind the table. And he was just staring at her, and I thought, oh, God, I hope there's no chemistry here. Oh, my God. Anyway, he led the charge. A clean sweep. The wind out of me. When I heard the first acquittal, I thought, oh, there must be going to a lesser, not guilty of first-degree murder. There must be going to a lesser. And then they moved on to count two. They had moved off of count one. And there were obviously the misdemeanor counts of lying to the police, but there was a count that involved with the lessers, you know, manslaughter, criminally negligent, homicide. I mean, just a negligence for failing to report her daughter missing. It was a clean sweep. I kept thinking, surely they're going to find her guilty of something besides the misdemeanors, and I was disgusted.
I know.
You know, frankly, I was shocked. I said, this woman.
And they didn't deliberate that long
it.
Either, right? It was a quick, fairly quick deliberation, as I recall. Yeah.
Actually, I don't remember the deliberation. I trust you on that. I don't remember. They all start to.
I mean, it wasn't as quick as OJ, but it wasn't that long, I don't think. I remember my mom called me actually, and she said, "You got to be." You know, I thought she was kidding because I was all along saying, come on, she's got to get." I didn't know she would get the top count, but I figured at least manslaughter. They would compromise on that. But as it turned out, though, as I recall, they were they said when they interviewed them later that they were split like 6-6 when they first went in, and I was like, "How did they cave that fast? The other six? I mean, you know, if I was, you know, you think somebody would have held out at least a little longer." It was mind-boggling, but I think he pushed through that jury selection, and maybe there were some people who shouldn't have gotten on that jury because he really believed it was a slam dunk. You've got to be careful who you put on the jury. And they used social media. This was the first, I guess, these two trials, Anthony and then Arias, were like the social media trials where they really used it, right? Didn't Baez and the team kind of, they looked where people were thinking, and there were a lot of people who for some reason didn't like George. I thought he and the brother were the most sympathetic, but of course we got stories and coverage from the media that allegedly, the jury wasn't privy to, you know, all the
right.
The risk,
you know, and Jose Baez is pretty good with social media, and he was at that time. And we're talking 2011. Well, I am really surprised that Juan Martinez didn't check at least the Facebook pages of the jurors, because if he had, he would have found Juror 17's likes, which included Laws of Attraction, The Secret, People Against
Our
Bio.
Jody, yeah.
And I, you know, I had her name before the jury press conference because it got leaked and posted. I never posted it, and I delete any time anyone puts her image up. I delete it, or at least when I see it, I delete it. And on my site, because I don't want to. I'm trying to protect all the jurors. And she didn't have privacy settings on. I mean, I wasn't a friend to this juror, but I could click on her likes and see her likes. It included Nancy Grace, too. That's pro-prosecution. And all the local news channels. And she was questioned about that during deliberations. But Martinez didn't find it early enough, which is too bad because, you know, he's, you know, I don't think he uses social media himself, unlike Baez, who does. So, you know,
right.
they're in a generation, I'm in that generation of people who kind of lived through this digital age and this transformation of, you know, communication in our society. So some people reject it, some embrace it.
Yeah, you got to catch up with it, especially with these high-profile
right.
cases. But really, talk about what do you feel the future is going to be for these, especially high-profile cases, because they will get covered somewhere, some way. I mean, even if you don't cover it all the time on places like HLN, somebody, if it's a really high-profile case, will find a way to do it
and
broadcast it, and it will.
An athlete, I think you're going to see, you know, ESPN pick it up, although
yeah.
I don't know how much the Hernandez case at this point is getting, how much coverage it's getting. But, you know, you might find a local cable station carrying it. But for people and other communities across the country or world, I think they're going to have to get it online and through social media.
Online,
the reason
right.
a lot of people came to my site, at least during the trial, is because I logged the trial. I was logging it so that you didn't have to follow Twitter feeds. You could just read my blog,
right.
which was a blog, every few minutes, and I would put the time code in there. So you could see what happened all day long, and you could read it at the end of the day.
Right. But what about the influence of social media? Because, again, you know, you have these people who get rabid about some of these cases. You, for whatever reason, you get entrenched in the narrative, you start taking sides, and the people are very passionate about it. I mean, how is that going to influence, or how has that influenced some of these cases? Like, well, Anthony, of course, everybody thought she was guilty, except for those jurors, and she got off. So, you know, you could say it still worked anyway. On the other hand, did they use it and manipulate it?
Yeah,
because they manipulated it.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
I think that lawyers are going to have to be more vigilant about social
yes.
media, and they have to be. And they are already in some states and some courts. It is just Juan Martinez wasn't. I think the defense might have been a little more savvy, but I'm not sure because I don't really have that much contact with them either, but I get the sense that they are. So, you know, the future, look, courtrooms are public. People have a right to say what they want. There was a downside to the social media in the televised trial. It might hurt the televising of trials because there was a lot of what people call cyber lynching of a witness in Arias' first trial, a witness for the defense, Alice LaViolette.
Alice LaViolette.
She was
a
violence expert because she totally bought into everything Arias said, and she really did buy it, hook, line, and sinker. I mean, it was like
she did.
Not
Boy, did she buy it, yeah.
But she landed in an emergency room, you know, with like pain in her chest from stress. And then people were calling her business and threatening her, and they were writing reviews on Amazon for her book they didn't read, you know. So
right, that was awful. That was awful. I agree with that. You can't do that. I mean, that's just, I don't get it. But, yeah, she did buy it hook, line, and sinker, and we thought the other guy was bad. Samuels, he was kind of bumbling. The psychologist they had on before her. But then she came on, and she was even worse. But that's the point. And then you won't have people who want to do it. You know, you won't have experts. I mean, you always have to find an expert, I guess, who will do it. But it's just in terms of jury service, when people lash out at the jurors, then I'm thinking, well, who's going to? People like to get out of jury service as it is. So, you know, who's going to want to do it except the stealth jurors who think it's going to be exciting or they want to write a book or whatever it is. And,
right.
You know, it's just not, you know.
And it can be hard to ferret out stealth jurors. It's possible, and
yeah.
social media may make it easier to find those stealth jurors if they're active on social media and expressing themselves, you know, in a way that you didn't have access to that kind of information,
right.
those opinions. You just had to rely on what somebody was saying when you were asking them questions in the courtroom. I mean, that's how I picked juries back in the day.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, right.
You know, Twitter
were there
didn't
any
even
other
exist. I just want to, when I was covering Scott Peterson's trial, there was no camera in that courtroom, but there was an audio feed into an overflow room so that people who couldn't be in the courtroom people couldn't be in the courtroom or who needed to come and go because they were really rigid with the courtroom rules could type and log it. And I had a producer sitting in an overflow room listening to audio only, sending me what is the equivalent of tweets today, but Twitter didn't exist. On my BlackBerry, and I sat in front of a camera in the Scott Peterson trial all day, or most of the day, like for an hour at the end of the day I got to go into court. And I read his tweets, basically, but Twitter didn't exist. And so that's how I covered that trial. So people think they watched Scott Peterson's trial. They didn't. They watched me read my BlackBerry, and I tried to act it out as I was reading it. Of course, we had the Amber Fry audio tapes, phone calls of, between Scott and his mistress, and then video of him at a candlelight vigil for his missing wife when he's actually, you know, on the phone with her, telling her that he's in Paris for New Year's and she should see you, how wonderful it is, and the theme is, you know, America.
Because you recreated it, basically. We didn't see the actual testimony. You recreated it with all that other stuff. Oh, that's interesting.
I read it. I was like I was on a witness stand, you know, reading a transcript.
Yeah.
That's, we see people do that. And that same summer, Mark Zuckerberg was with a group of his Harvard, you know, classmates about a mile away from my hotel. I was living in Palo Alto for 6 months. He was creating Facebook that summer.
Interesting.
So,
how technology has brought up
perspective, how things have changed, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Scott Peterson, 2004, 11 years ago.
Yeah. Wow.
There was no Facebook and there was no Twitter.
Oh, and he sort of, he faded away. I mean, obviously that's what happens. This is the thing. People are worried about Jody and she's going to court the media. Well, once you're in prison, there's not really that much courting of the media you can do, right? I mean, she's not going to be able to blow up and have a little media tour and all this other stuff. Obviously, right now she can't because the sheriff has shut her down, but I'm sure the people in Perryville prison are not going to be opening their doors.
No, it's very hard there. I actually visited Perryville a couple of weeks ago, my last weekend before the mistrial, to see somebody who's in there, a defense lawyer I know who's in there, but also just to kind of check it out. But I went in not
as a defense lawyer who's in prison? I mean, the defense lawyer committed crime? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, just for, yeah, like facilitating something. I don't know. She told me she didn't even think it was a crime. So I wanted to go check out Perryville and say hi to her, and she'll be out not too long. It was a short sentence. She's in medium security. But she said she hasn't heard anything bad about Jody. Like, Jody's got a lot of friends at Perryville because so many of the women there actually passed through that Phoenix jail where she is, called Estrella.
Oh, right.
And they like her. But, you know, I've read other things. I've read that it's not so. And Jody's going to be in maximum security, and that some of the women there are not happy that Jody got $3 million defense and all this attention.
Mm.
So they're going to put her in her place.
Yeah. Crazy. I mean, it's really, it's intriguing. I mean, the whole thing is intriguing, but she will be gone. You know, she's going to be gone pretty soon. I mean, she's back in the news now for the sentencing coming up, and you're putting your money on, you know, life without possibility of parole. We'll see what happens.
Yep.
We hope that's the case. Otherwise, there'll be another big firestorm on social media, and I don't think Judge Stevens will do that. What's with Arizona, though, in these long trials? We don't have a lot more time left, but I do remember and you did cover part of the James Arthur Ray trial, the so-called spiritual guru.
Right. One of my former colleagues from Court TV, who obviously she's, you know, not with Turner Broadcasting anymore, and I told her the schedule in the Arias case, and she said, you know, we never liked covering Arizona cases at Court TV. I said, why not? Because I didn't remember. And she said, because their schedules are, you know, not that many hours of trial during the day and a lot of dark days, and that is just part of the culture in Arizona. I don't know why they meet for trial 4 days a week, and the judge does a calendar in the morning, and so sometimes the trial won't start till 10:30, and then they have an hour and a half lunch, and then they'll have, you know, 1:30 to anywhere from 3 to 4. I mean, the hours were a little bit longer when court was in session for Jody Arias, but they're only about 45 days of trial.
It's like having a trial in Italy, like Amanda Knox. I mean, the James Ray trial was like 9 months, and they take like a vacation in the middle of it or something.
I don't know why, and it was just a manslaughter. But there were a lot of victims. There were three dead victims, and then a lot of people were injured and stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, and he's out now, by the way. And we're going to talk about this another day because we don't have a lot of time to go into it with you. But, you know, he's out now, again, repackaging the same snake oil, and he's using these, like, descriptions about his experience, like rising from the ashes, and he has this whole ring of fire on his new, I don't know if it's a DVD set or whatever. I'm like, wait
that's
a minute.
Expensive.
This is very offensive, and he's making news, but not in a good way. So I don't think he learned that much from his...
That Sweat Lodge was way bigger than it should have been. It accommodated 65, 70 people. Sweat lodges are supposed to be small. You're supposed to be able to monitor everybody in there. It was just, you know, it was really, it was what he was convicted of, which is criminally negligent homicide. I don't think he went in there, you know, with the elements of manslaughter, you know, that it was knowingly being reckless. But he was negligent to what was happening in there.
Yeah, and he did have some warning, because I know when I first heard about it, I never heard of this guy. I know he supposedly was fairly well-known in the so-called self-help movement, and I remember when I heard about it, I said, well, it sounds like an accident. Why are they blaming this guy? You know, and then when I learned more about it, I had interviewed some of the family members of one of the victims and another woman who was a former disciple who wrote a book about it. And
Connie Joy.
Connie Joy, yeah.
Yeah.
And she went, you know, she said she had done this sweat lodge not that year, but another year, and she said that people got sick, and she warned him. People had warned him it was dangerous. So he did have some inkling that this was not a good thing. So instead, he ratcheted it up. He made it hotter. And when people were complaining, he said, well, we'll get to it later. We just took a break. I was like, what? I mean, if somebody's sick, somebody's sick. You can't, you know. Her theory, I think, was that she said he didn't want anybody to die, but he liked playing God. That was his thing. And he wanted to bring them to the brink of death and then be the one to bring them back. And that's very dangerous.
So I heard a documentary being made about him, so we'll have to be on the lookout for that.
We'll have to be on the lookout. Beth Karras, I know you got to go. You've given us so many great insights. You are out there. I hope we see more of you. I know you have your new venture. We should plug that. It's called Karras on Crime. Are you going back to the area sentencing?
KarrasOnCrime.com. I'm gearing up for Brian, what's his name? Justin, wait, I forgot his name. Brian Roth Harris. The guy,
I know. Justin Roth Harris, I think it is.
Justin Roth Harris, gosh.
The hot car dad, okay.
I just got a bunch of documents in that case. So I'll be, you know, I get documents and cases. My subscribers like to read a lot and then get my analysis, so I'd put up some videos.
Okay, so find out more, go to the site. It's KarrasOnCrime.com. Be on the lookout for her next case. Are you going to go back to areas for the sentencing, or you just don't think it's
worth it? Yeah, that's my plan. My plan is to go back.
You are, okay. You'll be there on the 13th. All right.
Well, we'll do it again.
That's a pleasure.
Okay?
Yes, absolutely. Please do. I really appreciate you coming on the show. We appreciate your insights. And, boy, you have so many stories you know about and so much, legal analysis you can offer. Thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciate
it. My pleasure. Glad to share it. Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Beth Karras. Again, find out more from her site, KarrasOnCrime.com. It is the Amy with Arkwe Show. Time to get into the mix at 347-857-4505. Twitter feed, too, at AB Writes.
Once that you've decided on a killing, first you make a stone of your heart. And if you find that your hands are still willing, then you can turn a murder into art. There really isn't any need for bloodshed. Just do it with a little more finesse. If you can slip a tablet into someone's coffee, then it avoids an awful lot of mess. Because it's murder by numbers.
those murder by numbers with the police on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. Again, thanking Beth Karras for coming on, the noted political, the criminal analyst, legal analyst who covers oh so many cases, Arias and beyond. Find out more at her site, KarrasOnCrime.com. On our Twitter feed, a couple of new tweets coming in. Nixie, one of our hardier regulars, chiming in. Another great interview. Boy, fabulous insights. Beth knows her stuff. Yeah, she does. That's why we're so grateful that she came on to offer them. She's covered. This woman has covered so many trials. It's amazing. That front row or sometimes back room, she gave us the inside view that sometimes she's not even in the courtroom. They have to do it on the, in a media room on the side, but they capture it, and it is, oh, so fascinating indeed. Hope they get another network up and running that covers some of this stuff. I'm thinking maybe MSNBC because, you know, they've been kind of teetering with bad ratings, and they used to have the Abrams Report with Dan Abrams years ago, and there's room for it, maybe not for the whole network, but at least to have some shows and certainly to have coverage when a big high-profile case is there. I know it's expensive, but my God, that's what cable was about, people. You know what I'm saying? But Beth is offering it for us, and of course we now have the Internet, so everybody here, we're all on the Internet. All people who have been displaced from TV and radio, raise your hands, we all know. Find out more about her cases. She's on to the hot car dad, Justin Ross Harris, and of course the final word on Arias, at least before the appeals, the sentencing, on April 13th. She says no idea, no way that she's going to get a possibility of parole. There's some people now are panicking about that. But even if she got the possibility of parole, which I don't think she will either, because, come on, Judge Stevens is still working there. I don't think she's retiring yet, and I think she may want to retire in the same state of Arizona. And she's a former prosecutor and all of that. But even if she had the possibility of parole, first of all, according to Beth and others, it's not that easy to get parole there because there's no mechanism for it once you're in for life, you know, for now. Again, that may be reevaluated in 15, 20 years, but it doesn't mean if you get even a parole hearing with that heinous a crime, you're going to get it. I mean, look at what happened in all the Manson people. They're not getting out. I mean, there's always somebody who's looking for clemency for Leslie Van Houten. John Waters is big on that. But she's in for life, and she committed that crime when she was 19, probably on drugs, under the influence of drugs and Charles Manson. And she's managed to change her life and her ways, and she's gone to school in prison, and she has a job. And, I think that's okay. I'm not so sure I think it's okay for Jodi Arias to have her own, single dorm room in prison and get out, move up the ladder within 30 days. That I don't know so much of that. I think that's a good idea, although I'm not really for unlimited solitary confinement either. That seems to be cruel and unusual punishment. But, maybe a little stronger restrictions on her, at least initially, since she is a lifer and she did something so heinous. But, prison is prison. I don't know. When Nancy Gray, sometimes she talks about how they have their, the three hots and a cot, and they get to go to the commissary and all this other stuff. No. I don't think I'd want to do it, would you? So come on, Nancy. It's still prison, and her life as she had envisioned it is certainly over. And, of course, Travis doesn't have a life at all, and that's what you have to keep in mind. But there is justice for the Alexander family because she's going to prison. She was convicted of that crime. Keep that in mind, folks. Indeed. We'll talk more about it, of course, as we get towards sentencing. Our pal Dr. Daniela Schreier maybe come back and give us some more psychological analysis. We need that big time, right? As we get closer. And I think she's actually almost thinking that parole or possibility of parole is an okay thing. We'll talk to her about that. I was kind of shocked when she tweeted me about that because I'm not so sure I think so. I think she kind of voted herself off the island. I don't believe in the death penalty, but I think sometimes the offense is so heinous, you're just off. You have to be in prison. You can have some redemption while you're in prison. I think Leslie Van Houten has done stuff. Go ahead. But I don't think you should get out. That's just my opinion. Everybody has a different one, and that's okay. Twitter feed available at AB Writes. Phone line 2347-857-4505. As we knock on wood today, because you know what? It is Friday the 13th. So far, the gremlins stayed away. Uh-oh. Did I say something?
Come.
Knocking on Wood on Friday the 13th here on the Amy Beth Arkoui Show. Some leftover Jody Arias Afterglow comments on the Twitter feed. Stank sending me an attachment here to a tweet from Justice for Victims, who says, "Tweet attached is the very reason users are advised to block ignorant Jody Arias killer groupies," with a tweet attached from FFJ, Freedom for Jody, I guess that's called. And they say, "The hater trolls are not only full of hate and bitterness, but they are totally childish as well." And then there's some ugly other tweets back and forth. That it's ugly out there in social media, folks. Find something else to do with your time and just channel that positive energy if you can. Hey, speaking of positive energy, I want to give our Inspiration to Action shout-out today to Sammy, who is out on Long Island, New York, and says, "The winter was tough, but the challenge got me through it." No kidding, it didn't get me through it. I'm so happy, Sammy. And says, "I am pursuing painting and writing in a whole new way because you gave me the freedom to release my creativity and look at things with fresh eyes." Well, thank you so much, Sammy. I'm glad it's working for you. Congratulations. Keep going. Creativity can get you through if you channel it right, and that's what I think is so important. Hey, if the Inspiration to Action Challenge has worked for you, please let us know. I'd love to give you a shout-out. You can do so via the website, amybetharkoui.com. Also, if you need a little cajoling in that department, let's start a creativity coaching, counseling conversation. First one, always on me. And now that it's spring, we'll start having the season of renewal, and we'll get going. Also coming up, we got some new shows, some great guests coming up in the offing, but I want to mention a couple of request shows coming up, including our Hall of Fame request show in April. We're going to salute the new inductees into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class of 2015. And also, we're going to have a wish list for your consideration. Who do you want to see inducted in 2016? So write in your favorites for 2016. Remember, they have to have been eligible, which means they had to have their first record out 25 years earlier, so just keep that in mind. But I know there's some folks that a lot of people are passionate about who've gotten snubbed. We're going to try to salute some of those, too. You can do it via Twitter, at AB Writes, with the hashtag Hall of Fame, or Rock Hall of Fame, or do it over at the website, amybetharkoui.com. Just appreciate the hashtag on Twitter, because we get so much other correspondence, I want to make sure we see it. Or Trudy and the gang, Aurora, who handle the Twitter feed so nicely, can do that. Okay, so thank you so much. We'll do that. We have our Spring Awakening show coming up, and we have some great guests. Also, this coming Tuesday, you'll meet Rita Plush. She is an author of a fun coming-of-age or coming-of-middle-age comic novel called Lily Steps Out. And she's a woman who embraced her dreams later in life, had her first book published in her 70s. She's also a decorator, so she's got a lot of that in this book, too. I'm sure a lot of it is drawn from her own experiences, but it's quite fun. And she really does kind of put the kibosh, both her character and her own life, on that old saying from F. Scott Fitzgerald that there are no second acts in American life. Not true. You can pursue your dreams. You know, this is one of my things I always talk about. You want to do it, do it. Now, if you wanted to be, you know, the lead dancer in the New York City Ballet, maybe not so much. If you wanted to play shortstop for the Mets, okay, that's probably out. But if you want to paint, you want to write, you want to travel, you want to do a garden, you want to learn how to cook, you want to do any number of things, you can do it at any age. So really,
you know, grab those dreams and let's bring them to fruition. And if I can help you do that via this show or off the air, I'd be happy to do it. So reach out to the website to tell me what you're up to and what I can do to help you at amybetharkawi.com, and we'll do it. And we have some great guests who also, I think, inspire, and I think she's going to be one of those. So we'll see coming up on Tuesday. So lots ahead, a lot of authors, I think, this month coming up, and then in April we're going to have some fun, also with some authors and musicians and some music shows, and, of course, the Tax Man cometh. Are you ready? Are you ready? Hey, are you watching the Jinx? This is it. Jinx, the Life and Deaths of Robert Durst on HBO. This is a fascinating, I am addicted to the show, and we're wrapping it up this Sunday. I know the first episode, for those who don't get HBO, is available free on YouTube and other places. The rest of it will be available, I'm sure, on, you know, on demand and download in short order, as most of these things are. You have to watch the series. It is so fascinating. This guy, Robert Durst, the real estate heir who has been having a cloud of suspicion over him for 30-some years since his wife disappeared in the early 80s, never been found, never charged officially with the murder, but people think he killed her. Then there's some murkiness about the murder of his friend Susan Berman in California. And, of course, as we know, he was, in fact, convicted of not of the murder, but of the dismemberment of the body of his neighbor, Morris Black, who he killed. He said in self-defense, and the jury bought it. So he was brought to on trial in Texas, but he beat the murder rap. They made a movie called All Good Things, thinly disguised. They changed the name from Durst to Marx. David Marx, I think, was the character's name in the movie. And the director, Andrew Jarecki, was contacted by Durst, who saw the movie, and said, hey, do you want to sit down and talk to me? I think it'll be interesting. This guy initiated this conversation and this series. It is so fascinating. And now there's talk in L.A. they're going to reopen the Berman case with him in the center of it due to the things that they found and they revealed in this show and that he said. Now, what's what? I hope it's not going to be anticlimactic. It looks like from the preview that he walks out and doesn't finish the interview in the final episode. We don't know. But they're reopening the case, and he did say a few weeks back when the show first started to reporters that after the sixth episode he would have an announcement. I'm thinking, is he going to confess? I mean, what's this about? It's just, you got to watch the show. It's riveting. On HBO Sundays, this is the final episode this Sunday. Find it on demand. You know, go over to a friend who has HBO. You got to watch this thing. It's just, it's fascinating. It's one of the most riveting TV pieces of television I've seen in years. The other show I'm kind of addicted to is The Slap on NBC, which they just moved from 8 o'clock on Thursday nights to 10 o'clock, which goes head-to-head with American Crime, which I was kind of getting into. But it's an interesting show because it really is a character-driven kind of show. It has a cable feel to it, like it should be on HBO. And NBC, you know, had low ratings, and the other show they pulled, called Allegiance, I think it was, they just pulled that one. They moved The Slap to 10. I guess they're going to commit to finishing it because it's a limited series. It's 7 or 8 episodes, and they ran 4 already. So hopefully they'll finish it because it's interesting. It's just, if you like character-driven stuff as I do, it's more about people and relationships than it is about, you know, the plot. So it's fascinating. So check that one out. Those are my things. The other thing is go see Still Alice. I keep forgetting. No, it's not funny. I keep forgetting to mention this, but it's a great adaptation of the Lisa Genova book about the woman who gets early onset Alzheimer's and her family and all of this. Julianne Moore just won the Oscar for it. If you can find it in theaters, it took a long time for them to get it in theaters, limited run. It probably will be on video fairly soon, but if you can get out to a theater, if it's still out there in your neighborhood, I think you're going to like that one. It's a good one. So check it out. Still Alice, that's my weekend pick. I missed a couple of the movies that were out because of the weather, and I had an interminable cold that went on and on, too, so I didn't get out as much this past winter. So I still have not seen The Imitation Game, which I want to see, and Birdman, which, of course, won the whole enchilada at the Oscars. And my sister's review was she didn't like it that much, and they didn't get it, she and her husband. And, in fact, my brother-in-law was the one who said, well, your sister has to see it to explain it to us, and I have yet to see it, but I'm going to try to see it if I can. I don't know if it'll be this weekend, but I'm going to try to do it. I hope you have yourself a good weekend. Catch up on that hour. I want that hour back. I'm still looking for that hour. I can't find it. I don't know. But weather is starting to get better, although around here they're calling for bad weather on Saturday. Figures, the weekend. But rain, not snow, and that we can kind of live with, I guess. Like we have a choice, right? We have no choice regarding that. You get what you get, as they say. And I think it's almost time for us to pack it in. Is it right, Trudy?
If that's not enough to get you out of bed, something's seriously wrong.
Wow, that was like a miracle.
One of those performances that I will never, ever forget.
We want you to have a great damn day.
That inspired me to be a better person.
time to go. Hey, whatever you do, wherever you go, please drive safe, play nice, dream big, and come back and see us on the Amy the Dark Wee Show. You can tweet me at AB Writes, and, of course, follow the Amy the Dark Wee Show at the Blog Talk Radio site. Download episodes there, NetNow, iTunes, or at the website, amybetharkwee.com, and Trudy, of course, too, at Twitter, at Radio Trudy. So I'm going to be throwing salt over my shoulder, knocking on wood like crazy, and dodging black cats, because I'm not superstitious or anything, but just in case. On Friday the 13th. Have a great weekend. Take care.
Brotherhood and colors of green and gray, and all you can do is laugh at her. Doesn't anybody know how to pray? Arizona. acting like a teeny bopper runaway child, and scrape off the paint from the face of a little town saint. I will be guiding you away. I'll be the Count of Monte Cristo. You'll be the Countess May. You can believe it, Robin Hood and Brotherhood and rolling the ball in the hay.
And I will be reading you an Aesop's fable.